Today's podcast is brought to you by Howie's new book, Paperboy. To order today, go to HowieCarshow.com and click on store.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio, it's the Grace Curley Show.
We got to bring in a new voice, a young voice, a rising voice. Grace Curley.
You can read Grace's work in the Boston Herald and the Spectator.
Especially Grace, stand up.
Here's the millennial with the mic, Grace Curley.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Grace Curley Show. Thank you so much for joining us on this gorgeous Tuesday afternoon. We've got a lot to bring you today. There's a ton of news out there. Trump's hush money. And now people are telling me, don't call it hush money. Everyone's always telling me how to label things because we don't want to label things in a way that gives the media the upper hand with the narrative. And I understand that. But at the same time, when there's so much going on, you got to cut me some slack. I'm just trying to keep these things straight. There's a new trial every day. For me, hush money, Stormy Daniels, it's the easiest way for me to remember it. It's all it is. I'm not trying to feed into a narrative. I'm not trying to bolster the left in any way. I just am trying to keep them all organized in my mind. And hush money right now, hush money, NYC, Stormy Daniels, they're all under one category. And that's what's going on right now in New York City. The juror selection is underway, which I'm sure, I mean, even more so than in other high-profile cases, this is really going to be tough to try to find people who don't have an opinion already formed about Donald Trump. I don't even know where, you know, yesterday, every morning, every Monday morning, I call into WGAN, and I get to talk with Mac Gagnon. And we were talking about independence, because when you're discussing presidential elections, like it or lump it, a lot of times it does come down to the people who can still be won over one way or the other. And Matt asked me about this group of people, you know, the people who kind of waffle in the middle, who wait until it gets closer to an election to decide. And I said, I would love to meet one of these people in the wild because I really don't know any. Maybe I know some of these people and we've just never talked about it because I really don't talk about politics all the time, but it sounds like unicorns to me. In the bubble, in the world that I live in, and yeah, we all live in our own bubbles. They might not be as fancy and cool as Katie Couric's, but we all have a bubble that we live in. The people I know, the people I interact with, have made their opinion one way or the other. They're not in the center going, this Trump guy, I haven't figured out how I feel about him yet. So when you're having a juror selection and it's something this important, I would think that it's going to take a lot of time to really weed out people who have strong political opinions about DJT. He did come out yesterday in front of the courthouse and he talked about how the judge, who he already is not fond of, is not going to let him miss the trial or delay the trial for Barron, his youngest son's graduation, which is in May. And do I have this sound, Emma? Let's have cut 14, please.
We had some amazing things happen today. As you know, my son has graduated from high school, and it looks like the judge will not let me go through the graduation of my son, who's worked very, very hard. He's a great student. Very proud of the fact that he did so well. And I was looking forward for years to have graduation with his mother and father there. And it looks like the judge isn't going to allow me to escape this scam. It's a scam trial. If you read all of the legal pundits, all of the legal scholars today, there's not one that I see that said this is a case that should be brought for trial.
Now, for people who, like me, are trying to keep track of this, the judge in this case, in the hush money case, is Judge Merchan. And Trump's come under fire before for pointing out the fact that Judge Merchan's daughter runs a firm that runs or works for a firm that runs digital campaigns for Democrat candidates who in the past have fundraised off of the fact that Trump's dealing with all of this lawfare, I guess is the correct way to put it. So this company, this firm, has run digital campaigns for Adam Schiff, for Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. And all of those people, all of those politicians, have pounced and weaponized and politicized the fact that their enemy, the big orange bad man, is dealing with criminal cases against him. And so the reason I bring this up is because they already have a lot of tension here. Trump has had gag orders placed on him because he's pointing out the obvious, which is, and you know, the way the media wants to spin this, the way I keep seeing it on social media, is like, oh, you shouldn't be attacking a judge's child. She's an adult woman who's gone on podcasts and talked about this before. She's talked about Trump being on social media. Like, she opened this can of worms. I'm not saying that anyone should threaten her. I'm not saying that anyone should be mean to her or bully her or harass her. But I don't think it is out of line for Trump to say, hold on a second, this seems like a conflict of interest. Point out the obvious. So now he's saying the judge won't let him go to Barron's graduation. And to be fair, he did say it seems like I'm not going to be able to go. The reports that I'm seeing today are that the judge basically couldn't guarantee that Trump was going to be able to go and kind of said, like, you know, we'll see what happens. We'll see where we are in the case at that point. I do think that is wrong. I think the judge could have easily said, listen, no matter what happens that day, we can take a recess and you can go to your son's graduation. You know that he can do it in a day. It's not like he's going to have to be gone for 3 days. He's got plenty of ways to get around. So I think it seems cruel and unusual to require someone to miss their child's high school graduation for a case that, dare I say, isn't life or death. I don't think Stormy Daniels and the hush money payments is that serious of a case that he can't afford to miss one day or to put it on pause for a day for Barron's high school graduation. And I also don't understand why the judge wouldn't want to just let him do that. Just to kind of stave off the appearance of being unusually cruel. Do you know what I'm saying? It's like, that's an unforced error, in my opinion, on the part of the judges. He could easily just say, he could be overly accommodating just to offset the accusations from Donald Trump. He should be over the top in saying, listen, of course you can go to your son's graduation. Of course. Then you come back. That way the American people are looking at this and they're going, well, you know, yeah, he's got conflicts of interest, but, you know, he seems to be trying to do the right thing. But it's almost the opposite. It's like they're going out of their way to make it seem like everything's stacked against Trump. They're fueling this narrative that the Trump campaign has been fundraising off of and has been re-energizing the base with, which is, this is a witch hunt. This is a sham case. And they're trying to take this guy down because they don't like him. Otherwise, what's the explanation for that? What's the explanation for why you just can't come straight out and say, yeah, you'll be able to go to your son's graduation? I think that the pettiness is the point. The cruelness is the point. And you might say, it's not cruel. I tend to think that is. In the same way I thought it was cruel to make kids miss graduations because of COVID, to miss, you know, sporting events or proms because of COVID, I do think that there's something nasty about not letting, and that's a Trump word. I'm sure he'll use that at some point in True Social. There's something nasty about not letting a father go to their son's high school graduation, because you're going to make them sit in a courtroom for these BS charges. 844-500-4242. Now, the other part of this conversation, and by the way, the traffic in NYC is going to be brutal all summer with Trump coming in and out of these courtrooms. You know, I've noticed, Emma's on the board today, by the way. I've noticed that when Trump's outside in that hallway of the courtroom and he talks to the press, there's something about that. Like, if I were a TV editor, that visual, for some reason, is very compelling. Him shouting at the press while being like half in, half out of this courtroom. There's something about it that's TV gold. I noticed that when he makes a statement, like he makes statements all the time where he'll set up a podium, he'll be at Mar-a-Lago, and those things are fine. You've got the right lighting. You've got the right visual. He's got a script. He kills it on that front. But there's something about, I don't know if it's like the spontaneity or all of the craziness outside with the paparazzi and the cameras and the gates up. There's something about that that whenever that's on TV, my eyes go to it and I want to know what he's saying.
And when he leaves, he has to do a full 180.
Yes.
Really dramatic.
Yes. And whatever he says last before he turns around ends up being a headline, whether or not he wants it to be or not. Like, he can plan out whatever I say before I turn my back to the reporters. It can be a mic drop moment and it's going to go viral and people will be reposting it. He's got a lot of control right now as far as, in a similar way to 2016, the press, as much as they hate him, they are giving him just endless amounts of coverage and of PR and like nonstop megaphones in his face where he's able to get out his message. And I know that's not what they necessarily want, but that's what they're doing. It reminds me a lot of 2016. When they look back on this, when he wins again, they're probably going to go, well, we did put him on TV all the time. And they can't do that with Joe Biden because nobody knows where Joe Biden is. He's sitting with the Iraqi prime minister, you know, reading off his cue cards, telling him to take a pause every once in a while. 844-500-4242. And of course, the other story involving Trump's hush money trial is the reports that he fell asleep. That he fell asleep yesterday during this court case, during the juror selection, or during whatever, you know, procedural part of the case was going on, the trial was going on, he fell asleep. And we will talk about that when we come back. Plus, updates from yesterday's anti-Israel demonstrations and Katie Couric in the news. Talk about a blast from the past. Katie Couric is picking up where Don Lemon left off as far as calling us all credulous boomer rubes. We'll talk about that when we return. Listen up, everyone. You've waded through the cold temps in February and the rainy weather in March. Now the longer, warmer days are finally on their way. Spring means more flowers and more sunshine. It can also mean pollen. It can mean a lot. I saw Ben Domenech today from The Spectator. He put out that he went outside to his car today just covered in pollen. It's that time of year. And that can mean that, you know, you got to reach for the tissues, but I actually have a better solution for you. You should get yourself an Eden Pure Thunderstorm. And right now, they're running a three-pack special. The Eden Pure Thunderstorm can eliminate any pollutants or allergens floating around in the air. And it's quiet. It doesn't take up a lot of floor space, but it starts working right away. You're going to notice that the air is pure, that it feels like it does right after a thunderstorm when the rain comes and washes out all of those, you know, allergens and pollutants in the air. So I want you to get the three pack. I want you to save money. And here's what you need to do. Go to EdenPureDeals.com and use code GRACE3 to get the three pack special. That's EdenPureDeals.com. Use code GRACE and the number three, Grace and the number three, to get the three-pack special. Say hello to spring and goodbye to allergens. Get the three-pack today. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Grace Curley Show. This is The Grace Curley Show.
Welcome back, everyone, to The Grace Curley Show. Thank you all so much for joining us. Let's go to Leslie. You're up next on The Grace Curley Show. Go ahead, Leslie.
With Trump. I hear Jonathan Thoroughly and I hear Dershowitz, all these high-powered, brilliant attorneys. They state their comments, but nobody comes to his defense. And where are all the people in New York City? I mean, there was a woman thrown down a subway at 68, and the judge let her off. What about the guy that had the 9 prior arrests and killed somebody? Where are the protesters in New York City?
They're all on the Brooklyn Bridge. They're all on the Brooklyn Bridge protesting Israel and chanting death to America. Yeah, I mean, I agree with you, Leslie, as far as what's happening. And you know what's interesting about New York is if you look at yesterday, there was all these protesters all over the country burning American flags, you know, cheering on Iran. Talk about the greatest generation would be just, they're probably turning over most of them in their graves. But the interesting thing is, if you look at Florida and the way they handled it, it's amazing, and it's really telling how different states handle these. I don't even want to call them activists. I think that's giving them too much credit, or protesters. I call them pains in the asses or nuisances, people who are blocking traffic, people who don't have jobs during the day, and or if they do have jobs, I don't know what kind of jobs you're holding down where your employer goes, hey, where are you? And you're like, hey, I'm on the Golden Gate Bridge. I'm gonna need a couple hours today because I've got my anti-Israel sign, my anti-Bibi Netanyahu sign, and I need a couple hours to, you know, state my case. It's absolutely insane. As far as Jonathan Turley and these legal experts go, I would disagree, Leslie. I've been reading a lot of their stuff. Jonathan Turley, he posts some stuff on his own website. And he also writes a lot for the New York Post. And he's done an excellent job of breaking down this case. And I actually think that they're not as, when you're talking about a Jonathan Turley, when you're talking about some of these guys from the Federalist, when you're talking about some of these legal scholars, they're not as colorful in their commentary as other people might be, but that's just their way, Leslie. That's because they're not there to be political pundits. They're there to talk about whether or not these cases meet constitutional muster, and a lot of times they don't. But I actually think it helps Trump that these people who are a little bit more calm and a little bit more subdued can get out there and lay out the facts and not get amped up. Like, you don't want a Grace Curley in that situation who's going to be foaming at the mouth on TV and like, this is so unfair. This is a witch hunt. You want a Jonathan Turley. You want a quiet guy who says, listen, I've defended X. I've defended Y. This is not right. And I actually think that when you have an Eli Honig from CNN explaining how this case that Alvin Bragg has bent himself into a pretzel to bring forward in New York City is not in any way, shape, or form strong, that's good for Trump. These are people who do not like Trump. And even the legal experts who are very anti-Trump are admitting that this case is a sham of a mockery of a sham of a mockery of a sham. 844-500-4242. Speaking of Jonathan Turley, let's play Cut 12, Emma. This is Jonathan Turley talking about this hush money case and talking about Alvin Bragg in New York City.
Then what Bragg said was, well, I'm going to allege that you did false filings on business records to hide a crime. But he was very ambiguous what that crime might be. He still is ambiguous. But it is assumed to be a federal election crime. The problem is the federal government doesn't view it as a crime. They decided not to prosecute. And most election experts say that this is the type of thing that's failed in the past. So this bizarre indictment is now going to be an equally bizarre trial. And to this day, there's some confusion as to Bragg's actual theory as to what was the exact crime that Trump was hiding from all this.
Yeah, and to the last caller's point, to Leslie's point about Alvin Bragg and New York City and all of the craziness that's going on, I do think she's right in highlighting, and I think it's a very effective visual for people to highlight the hoops that Alvin Bragg and Letitia James and all of these get Trump prosecutors and attorney generals are going through, and DAs are going through to try to imprison. I mean, that's really their goal at the end of the day, to imprison and take down Donald Trump, versus how they are dropping the ball when it comes to a lot of people who should be in prison, who should not be recommitting crime after crime after crime, like the ones Leslie pointed out, like pushing people into the subway, like shooting cops in cold blood. When you look at that juxtaposition of how Trump is being treated and the amount of money and the amount of time and the amount of traffic and the amount of headaches and the amount of media attention that these cases are getting versus people who are being let out before dinner time for a crime they committed at noon, it is staggering. It is something that people should take note of. And one last point I would say is, I just mentioned Florida. There was videos of the protesters in Florida disrupting traffic. You know what happened? They were dragged out. They were arrested. And that was the end of that. In San Francisco, it went on for a very, very long time. And there was traffic, there was chaos, and the cops really didn't do anything. And I don't blame the cops. It's just the way things work in California. All right, we will be right back. This is The Grace Curley Show.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria Studio.
He appeared to be asleep, and you know, repeatedly his head would fall down. There have been other moments in other trials, like the E.G. Carroll trial, which was around the corner in January, where he appeared very still and seemed as if he might be sleeping, but then he would move. This time, he didn't pay attention to a note that his lawyer, Todd Blanche, passed him. His jaw kept falling on his chest, and his mouth kept going slack. Now, you know, sometimes people do fall asleep during court proceedings, but it's notable given the intensity of this morning and a lot of what was being argued.
Yeah, that was Maggie Haberman on CNN reporting that she thinks that Trump was asleep during the trial yesterday, the hush money trial in New York City. Now, Maggie Haberman, for people who are familiar with her relationship with Trump, very kind of on and off, frenemies, they hate each other, but he just can't quit her. I can't quit you, Maggie Haberman. He's always giving her inside scoop. I think he's always hoping that somehow she'll at some point write something positive about him. I don't know. I can't get into that twisted, toxic relationship between those two. But she's reporting that Trump was falling asleep. I don't remember hearing that he was ever close to dozing off during the E. Jean Carroll trials, but I also wasn't following that one as closely. So that brings us to our poll question, because I have some thoughts on this. Today's poll question is brought to you by Local Silver Mint, located in Ware, New Hampshire. Silver Dave will work with you directly, so contact him at localsilvermint.com. Emma Foley on the board. Emma, what is the poll question, and what are the results thus far?
Today's poll question is, did Trump actually fall asleep in court? Yes, but who can blame him? He was just faking it, or no, it's totally fake news.
I'm going to say, because my original question was going to be, do you think it helps or hurts Trump that he was supposedly snoozing in court? And for me, I think it helps him because it kind of exposes how dumb this whole thing is, that he's like falling asleep because he's bored by the whole thing. But do I think he actually fell asleep? From what I know about Donald Trump, from what I've read about him over the years, I just can't picture. I can picture him pretending to be asleep as like a bleep you to all the people there. Like, I'm not even going to be awake for this. But I can't imagine his mind actually shutting off. This is a guy who they say doesn't even sleep at night. Like, he's so into his phone. He's so into social media. He's so into the news. He's watching news programs all the time. He's so jacked up all the time. I think he's taking, he's drinking Diet Coke around the clock. He lives for this stuff. He lives for these. He's like a professional wrestler. He loves it. And so I don't think that once you get in the ring and it's go time, that actually his mind is going to allow him to doze off. I think he's faking it as a big bleep you to all of the people there.
Only 5% agree with you. He was just faking it. In the lead is no, it's totally fake news. And in second place with 34% is yes, but who can blame him?
It would make sense for the average person. Who could blame you? You know what I mean? It's like your sixth or seventh trial that's ongoing. You're exhausted. You're running for president. You're everywhere all the time. But he's not your typical guy. This isn't like me falling asleep. This isn't even like Joe Biden falling asleep. He's wired differently. You know what I mean? He's like, he's really, really energetic and awake for all of the minutiae. I think he kind of thrives off of all of this stuff. So I just can't envision him actually falling asleep. John, you're up next on the Grace Curley Show. Go ahead, John.
Hi. I was listening to you about Jonathan Turley, but all you have to do is think back, but you're only 10 then, to the OJ trial. That Johnny Cochran just took over the courtroom, and that's what you need. You need a big mouth to just talk over these judges once the trial starts. Talk over these judges. Don't stop and let them go, oh, I'm going to reprimand you. Nope, go right into it. And Trump should get a MyPillow and put it under his head, and then your fake thing will work. Okay, thanks for taking my call.
Thank you, John. And you know what? If Michael Lindell's listening, that would be a really good crossover. Is like, you know, be like Trump, be able to snooze anywhere, buy a MyPillow. I'm sure they have neck pillows. You know, use code Trump Hush for however much off. I think John could be onto something. Now, for people who missed the opening and our first caller, Leslie's point was she doesn't think that Jonathan Turley, that these legal experts that go on Fox and other places, that they are defending Trump enough. And I said, I actually think it helps when you have a little bit more of a subdued intellectual breaking these things down without being too rah-rah Trump, because it just shows to maybe the independents out there, to maybe someone who's not as invested in all of this as we are, that even people who are not political animals by nature can see what's wrong with this case. And it's their expertise. Now, John's point is, when you look at Johnny Cochran, when you look at some of these flashy lawyers, that's what Trump needs. But here's, John, where I would correct you just a little bit. Jonathan Turley's not on Trump's legal team. Like, Jonathan Turley's not Trump's lawyer. Trump's lawyer can be as flashy and outgoing and outspoken as he wants her to be and as she wants to be. And she's doing that. She's going out. She, you know, she wears fancy outfits. She goes out in front of the cameras. And I have no issue with that. I'm just saying, from an observer of all of these news networks, I think it helps to have people who are a little bit more tamed talking about these issues. It helps me report on them, at least. If you want to hear from Trump's lawyer, which is totally different, she's a little bit more of a Johnny Cochran than Jonathan Turley. This is Trump lawyer Alina Haba. This is cut 13. Please, Emma.
Now, this judge has eliminated many of those questions. You're not allowed to ask who they voted for. You can ask what news they watch. But I watch CNN and I watch Fox because I like to know what my opposition's saying. So it doesn't tell you what the status is. Now, when you're sitting with a president and a current nominee for the GOP, and you can't ask how you vote, you're shot in the foot right there. And you're in New York, which is a predominantly blue state. So, you know, that hindrance in itself is problematic just from the get-go.
Yeah, and Trump's team, and I don't just mean his legal team, his re-election team, the people he surrounds himself with, he's got plenty of Johnny Cochran's on the case. Like, he's got plenty of people who aren't afraid to, you know, get down and dirty and to really be in the public eye and to be out front, you know, media facing people. So I'm not worried about that. I would just say that some of these people, that's not what their job is. Some of these people are just actually breaking down the case, which I think is helpful. 844-500-4242. We will go back to Trump. We will go back to New York City. And in the 1 o'clock hour, we've got Jake Novak on, who's was on our show last week, and he did a really great job. He broke down a lot of these Middle East conflicts. He's going to do the same thing, also talk a little bit about the economy. But what I want to go to right now is a cut that has gone viral that's getting a lot of attention today, and it involves Katie Couric. Formerly, she was most known for her role as a host on the Today Show with Matt Lauer for years and years and years. And then she retired, and then she had a couple of other gigs. Like, I think she got a big gig at night somewhere, maybe NBC, I'm not sure. She couldn't cut it as a nighttime broadcaster. She was more of a daytime talk show type person. So then she does the podcast. Then she's had a bunch of different projects. She goes on with Bill Maher recently. Bill Maher has a show on HBO. That's not what this is. Katie Couric goes on Bill Maher's podcast and starts to talk about what she thinks of Trump supporters. Right there, huge mistake. Liberals should stop trying to explain what they think Trump supporters are, because they are always wrong. They are always missing the mark. And so I want you to take a listen to this. We'll break it down. We'll take your calls. This is Katie Couric, cut one.
Socioeconomic disparities are a lot, and class resentment is a lot, and anti-intellectualism and elitism is what is driving many of these anti-establishment, which are Trump voters,
right,
or anti-establishment.
Absolutely.
Voters. When people who are really struggling see people who have everything and are on top of that looking down on them, it is just a recipe for such anger and resentment and grievance.
You know, I'm kind of torn on this, because I guess there's parts of what she's saying that I don't think she's wrong about. But then I do think she's missing like a crucial part of this. And the part I think she's missing is she says, the part I find most offensive, because I guess she's talking about me, just like she's probably, if you're listening to the show, she's probably talking about you. There's parts of that that I don't think are a horrible examination of what's going on. And I think the idea of people looking down on people, that is a recipe for disaster. That is some of what we saw in 2016, 2020. But what I would argue, Emma, that she gets wrong is she says anti-intellectualism is part of this movement. And I find that, I do find that offensive, because by saying that, she's actually saying that they're considered the intellects, we're considered, we don't like them because of their intellect. And it's similar to what like Don Lemon said, oh, boomer rubes can't read a map, you know, oh, they don't like people who can read, you know, things like that. It's a common trope we hear a lot as part of the MAGA base. But I think it's faux intellectualism. Like, I think in their minds, they think they're so smart and they're this and they're that. But I don't feel that way. And I also don't feel that to just say people are jealous, I always find that to be a cop-out. It's kind of like what your mom says to you when you don't get invited to something. Oh, those girls are just jealous. Those girls are just jealous of you. And in some cases, that's true. But in some cases, it's like it might be something else, you know? And so I think to summarize why there's been this pushback, and not to say, well, maybe it could be because of Biden's failures, or maybe it could be because of the economy, or maybe it could be because of this issue, to try to blanket it away and try to paint it away by saying people are just jealous of us because we're so fabulous and we're so smart and we read books and they don't. And they're resentful because the world's moved on and they're still doing these lame ass jobs. Like, to me, you're oversimplifying something in such an insulting way. And what I would add into this is that I'm not jealous of Katie Couric's penthouse or Katie Couric's house in the Hamptons. I'm truly not. And I don't think most of my listeners would be either. I don't think people care that Katie Couric can buy nice things or go to nice places or go to fancy restaurants. They just don't want to be lectured on Katie Couric by how they should be living their lives. That's the part of it that she doesn't understand. For example, John Kerry flying private and eating Wagyu sliders does not bother me. That's not the issue. When you enter in the other part of the equation that John Kerry's flying private and eating Wagyu burgers and then trying to get all of us to ride bikes around and eat crickets for lunch, that's the issue. It's the hypocrisy. It's not the jealousy. It's not resentment to point out that Biden is failing and making us less safe and that people want their children to be safe. And there's no mea culpas here. There's no self-reflection on the part of the media. They would rather just say people are jealous of us than drill down on what they're getting wrong and why people feel this way. It's oversimplification to say, oh, people, you know, people resent us. People hate us because they ain't us. Oh, is that what's going on here? I don't want to be Katie Couric. And I have no interest in chilling with Katie Couric and her friends in the Hamptons. I'm sure it's beautiful. I'm sure it's lovely and more power to her. I just don't want Katie Couric coming in my life and telling me what to do and making my life harder. The policies of the left make my life and your life more difficult and less safe and less prosperous. And that's what people have an issue with. Richard, you're up next on the Grace Curley Show. Go ahead, Richard.
Boy, that's a great commentary, Grace. When I first heard Katie Couric's comments this morning, I thought, if I close my eyes, she sounds almost cadence-wise like Hillary Clinton. She's got the same style, the same mannerism. And you know what they do? I don't want to get too psychological about this, but they put on an air of reflectiveness. Oh, let me think about this. Let me see how exactly I want to put this so people will fully understand the point that I'm trying to make. Guess what? They become boorish. And she's boorish when she does that. But she is just like Hillary Clinton, sounds like her, acts like her, thinks like her. And they're posers. They pretend to be who they are not.
Yeah, and I think that part of it, the faux, you know, self-reflection, you're right. You're right, Richard. That's part of this. And it's to disarm people, to make people think that, you know, what you're saying isn't as offensive or what you're saying isn't, you know, as incorrect as it might be. Because, look, I'm just taking my time and I'm breaking it down. But you mentioned Hillary Clinton. I first thought of Barack Obama, gun-toting, you know, Bible-toting, bitter clingers. That is what came to mind for me. And, you know, if Katie Couric had her way, like she did with that gun rights activist movie and like she did with Ruth Bader Ginsburg, I'm sure she would have said to Bill Maher, can I look at this podcast after you're done and edit some things out? I'd like to splice it up a bit, make myself look better. But she didn't get that treatment. So the whole podcast came out and now she's all over the news for all the wrong reasons. She just thinks everybody's jealous of her. And really, if I were to like that last caller said, I don't want to psychoanalyze too much, but the vibe I get from Katie Couric, and this is nothing against her as a person, but she's constantly, for someone who has had a lot of success, there's a common theme with all these people. They never seem to actually just hang it up. It's like they're always back in it. They're always pushing a new project. They're always pushing something new. And I don't know, this is the way you make waves, I guess, is to say that anyone who votes for Donald Trump is just jealous and anti-intellectual, which I can assure you I'm not. I love intellectuals. I'm not one, I'll be honest, but I love hearing from them. That's why I bring on all these people, Ben Weingarten, David Harsanyi. You're going to tell me those guys are dopes? You're going to tell me Libby Emmons is a dope? I don't think anyone's buying that. 844-500-4242. And it goes back to the NPR conversation. By the way, Uri Berliner, the NPR journalist who commented on how much they've lost their ways. And that was something he said. He said, no mea culpas, no self-reflection after all these stories they got wrong. Guess what? He's on a 5-day unpaid suspension. So that's what having a different POV gets you. And I'm sure the new editor at the NPR said, you know, Uri's just jealous of all of us. So we've got to get him out of here. Can't have too many different viewpoints at the wonderful NPR. The melting pot known as NPR. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. 844-500-4242. This is the Grace Curley Show.
Hi, it's Toby from Cape Gunworks. I'm taking all your firearm and self-defense questions every Tuesday. Join Grace and me for 2A Tuesday. Tuesdays at 2 p.m.
This is the Grace Curley Show.
Yeah, so Katie Couric and Bill Maher, what a duo. Talking about elitism, talking about how Republicans are anti-intellectualism. I'm anti-faux intellectualism. I'm anti-snob. I'm anti-people lecturing me on things that they don't actually believe in or they don't actually abide by. I'm anti-rules for thee, but not for me. I'm definitely anti that. But the other thing that I would comment on here is that I always like to play the game of let's just say she's telling the truth. Let's just say it's not a horrible assessment, because I do think there's nuggets in there that are true. I do think people in this country do feel a resentment towards this elitist class that's telling us what to do all the time. But even if that's 100% true, and we're all jealous and we're bitter as can be, it doesn't absolve Katie Couric or any of this class of journalists from the mistakes, and I'm that's being very, very generous to call it mistakes, from the failures of the last 8, 9, 10 years of covering Donald Trump, of covering this whole section of voters, of suppressing real news stories like the Hunter Biden laptop. Just because you think people are jealous of you, that does not suddenly allow you to censor people or to demean people or to not report on real news. Like, that's your job. As I know she still considers herself a journalist, that's still your job. Whether or not people are hating and they're jealous and they're bitter clingers or not, you still got to report the facts. That doesn't change that. 844-500-4242. Jake Novak coming up next. Don't